This is Stephen Chohet, the author of the book Hollywood Stories. You're listening to Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Welcome back to the Dave's Gone By radio program, here with me, Rabbi Saul Solomon, the spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And, I spend so much time reading the Torah and the Tanakh and at the shul, but also secretly I am something of a cinema fan. Everything from foreign movies to strange American comedies to horror movies to the occasional porn film, don't tell my wife, all of it. I love cinema and movies and watching, eating some kosher popcorn. And what better time to talk about the movies than just the day before the Oscars, the 85th Academy Awards, are happening tomorrow night in Los Angeles, Hollywood. And we are here with author Stephen Chohet, the author of Hollywood Stories, which are short, entertaining anecdotes about stars and legends of the movies. Could there be a longer title, perhaps? Anywho, he's an expert on movies old and new, and also all the people who are nominated for this year's Academy Awards. So without further ado, or a don't, Stephen Chohet, shalom, and welcome to the neighborhood.
Hey, thanks, Rabbi. Well, thank you for having me.
I should say welcome back to the neighborhood, since we had you on a few months ago to talk about your book, Hollywood Stories. And I know you must have sold, two or three books from being on this radio program for doing that. But hopefully you'll sell two or three more in talking about the Oscars tomorrow night. Now, let me ask, are you excited about this year's Academy Awards?
I don't know if excited is not the word. I am looking forward to watching it, and I think I get excited when they come up to the big categories and they read the envelope and you read what's in the envelope, and then there's a moment of suspense. But I don't think I have like a big game excitement in the days beforehand, no, to be honest with you.
Did you ever? I mean, is it usually every year it's like, okay, a little bit of tension? Or was there a year when you were like on tinder hooks, if that might be the word?
I can't think so for the Oscars, no, to be honest with you. I'm always interested, but I can't say that I'm really excited. Excited for me is like when UCLA plays USC in football out here, and I mean, that, you know, gets me going like a week before the game. But
that happens to me when they have that chess tournament that those two colleges play. Oh my God, I can't sleep.
If I'm playing, then I'd be like that. But you know, everybody's got different things. They get their juices flowing. But when they are getting to the big moments and stuff like that, it certainly is tension filled, I think.
Let me ask, the host of this 85th Oscar program tomorrow night is Seth MacFarlane, who is the creator and the main voice on Family Guy. Do you have any thoughts about that choice of him?
You know, I'll tell you what my thoughts are. The TV show Entourage, the character of Ari, which was based on Ari Emanuel, who's Rahm Emanuel's brother. Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, President Obama's former chief of staff, one of the more powerful agents in Hollywood, the head of the William Morris Endeavor Agency. And I was watching an interview with him about a year and a half ago, and all he was talking about were content providers. I mean, movie stars, he didn't seem to care less whether he represented them or not. He was talking about Seth MacFarlane, about Larry David, about Susan Collins, the writer of The Hunger Games. So I think Hollywood has shifted quite a bit. I think the public is more aware of the creative behind-the-scenes people. I'm more aware that Joss Whedon was the writer and director of The Avengers, more aware that Julian Fellowes is the creator of Downton Abbey. I think just people know this, and I think a lot of people are impressed by them sometimes, at least as much as the actors. And I think Hollywood, generally speaking, is becoming less of a movie star-driven business and more of a concept-driven business. And, you know, in the 90s, it wasn't that way. In the 90s, they wouldn't go forward with a major movie without a big star, usually. And just to illustrate that, when Jim Carrey, he got $20 million for The Cable Guy, in the 1996, John Travolta found out, and for his next movie, Michael, he asked for $20 million plus $1.
He got and it. Both movies were flops, so that probably helped turn the tide towards the directors and the writers and the producers of these things rather than just the pretty faces in the front of them.
I think it's been turning steadily. You're absolutely right. I mean, there were a lot of times where you know, you had movies like Striptease with Demi Moore when she was getting $10 million a picture. You had a movie like Conspiracy Theory where you had $20 million for Mel Gibson, $12 million for Julia Roberts, $5 million for Patrick Stewart. I mean, people don't even remember that movie at this point, but they had to beg Joel Silver, the producer, had to beg the three of them to be in it. $37 million spent before one roll of film is shot. So now the studios are more focused on concept, and now they have a much more take it or leave it attitude toward the movie stars, and that's being reflected a lot of times in the salaries, which have really gone down. And of course, you know, the movie stars, it's hard to feel sorry for them for most people, but it's really affected the agents and the managers and their percentages.
Well, I don't know. I send my resume to Fred Weintraub, and I send my resume to Steven Spielberg and all these people, and George Lucas, and I say, look, I'll work minimum wage and a sandwich. Has to be a kosher sandwich, but it could be tuna fish. Put me in your movie. I get no phone calls.
Skype, Rabbi, Skype. That's how Jennifer Lawrence got the role in Silver Linings Playbook. She did a Skype audition, and they hired her in the last second. So that's what I would suggest.
I could do Skype. I just have to wash my talus. That would be it. That's all I got. Thank you for the advice. That's wonderful. We're talking with Stephen Shohet, expert on Hollywood and the movies. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the formation of the Oscars 85 years ago?
Louis B. Mayer, the most powerful man in Hollywood, and the head of MGM Studios, he wasn't a very big man physically, but he exuded a lot of power. He wanted the studio set people to help him build a new house down by the beach, and they said no because they had a union. And Mayer started thinking, what if the writers and the actors and the directors form unions? That would be a bad thing. It was one of the reasons L.A. had become the movie capital. It wasn't just the weather. It was because it was an anti-union town. So Mayer got a bunch of big shots in the industry together, like Douglas Fairbanks and director Fred Niblo, and had meetings over at his house. And they formed the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. And the main idea was it would be an arbitration board, that if you had a grievance with the studio, you'd come to the Academy and they would decide who's right and who's wrong. And naturally, being formed by the producers or a producer, they were more likely to come down in favor of management. And obviously, that didn't stop the unions from coming. But Mayer wanted the Academy to do other things as well. And out of the meetings came the idea that they should give out special awards for merit and achievement every year. And one reason they had this idea is simply because it was an excuse to be social, to have parties, because a lot of people were working on different movies and didn't get to see each other. So the first Academy Awards, 5 minutes of awards, 2 hours of partying, and back in 1929. But it occurred to Mayer that one of the ways they could get more publicity for it was have it be suspenseful. Don't know who the winners are. As they did in the first one, everybody knew 3 months in advance. So as time went on, it developed, and the more unions came into being, the more awards were added, like Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress, for example, in 1936. So, the modern Academy Awards, as we know it, gradually developed over time, but that was the original genesis.
And was it a morph into it being one of the biggest TV nights, second maybe to the Super Bowl? Now, was it a slow pro? When did it become so huge for America rather than just the industry?
It first went on television in the 50s, so it always got pretty high ratings, I think. I think, probably, I couldn't give you an exact date, but probably the last 15 years or so, is that it used to be when we saw the Oscars that we were, it was films that were competing that most people had seen, like The Sting or The Godfather or Jaws, you know, in the 1970s. And now, I think a lot of times people watch the Oscars and they haven't seen these movies, that these movies are dependent on the Oscars for their box office. Like The Artist or The Hurt Locker might be examples of that. And that's one reason why since the last 4 years, they've expanded the number of Best Pictures because I think it was 2009, The Dark Knight did not get nominated. And so they want more movies, so something like Avatar has a chance to get nominated because in theory that will make the ratings go up. So I think that's what, I mean, besides the fact that they've had some clunker shows, I think one of the reasons the ratings have gone down is because the movies have become sort of more independent, less familiar and less mainstream, the end of the year movies being nominated and the Oscars being an introduction to them rather than
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at the this year's lineup for Best Picture, I mean, okay, it's one thing they've got Les Miserables on there, and they got the Spielberg film Lincoln and Silver Linings Playbook, but there's also Amour and Beasts of the Southern Wild, whatever the hell that was. I mean, is where are these movies coming from? They might be very good, but it's quite a list. You know, it's 9 different movies.
Yeah, right, and I have to admit, I didn't see Amour just because, you know, I just don't want to see a movie about end-of-life situation, and that's what that movie is about, the elderly couple dealing with the end of life. I did see Beast of the Southern Wild, and you know, the little girl, Kavanjay Wallace, I'm sorry.
Gesundheit, yes.
Yeah, she was 6 years old when they made that movie, and it's probably a little bit unfair to her to be in competition with more seasoned actresses. What they used to do about that was they had a juvenile award. That way they could give out awards to people like Peggy Ann Garner in the movie A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, or people like Haley Mills in Pollyanna, and they didn't have to compete with the other actresses. And this would probably be a good time to have that. They got rid of that juvenile award when Patty Duke won the Oscar for The Miracle Worker back in 1963 at the age of 16. They figured that the younger actresses could compete. But I think,
Well, she's 6 years old, for crying out loud. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So they should give her a golden diaper. I don't know.
Right. She's 9 now, but she was 6 when she made the movie.
Are there any controversies really sort of contentious categories or things going on at this year's Oscars?
Yeah, I'd say the entire movie Zero Dark Thirty is a controversy, because, you know, you got people like Edward Asner and Martin Sheen protesting publicly about the torture techniques used in that movie. You've got Senator McCain and Senator Feinstein complaining about that movie and threatening to hold hearings and threatening to call Catherine Bigelow, the director, up on the stand for how did she get that information? It's not true. But the thing is that the information is public. Leon Panetta gave an interview on Meet the Press where he said enhanced interrogation was essential in helping to capture Osama, or helping to kill Osama bin Laden. So, but because of that movie's subject matter and the way it was handled, that's probably why Catherine Bigelow didn't get the Best Director nomination, and probably why Zero Dark Thirty doesn't really seem to have a great chance to win Best Picture. But yeah, I'd say definitely that's the biggest controversy. I think a lot of actresses who are like 20, 30, 40 years old are a bit upset that the 6-year-old, now 9-year-old little girl was nominated. I think that, they consider that to be that she's not like them, that they're crafting a role and coming up with story arcs, and she maybe is just being told by the director, in this scene, smile, in this scene, show this emotion. I mean, it's a matter of opinion. I have a friend in the industry who thinks Beast of the Southern Wild was the best movie of the year. year, and she deserves the Oscar. But I think a lot of actresses are unhappy that she got one of the five slots. So those are two controversies, and there's more.
Are there any things that you feel really strongly about, either someone who was nominated and should not have been, or something that you don't think will win but really ought to, that the rest of the world would think, they just gave it a nomination, but nothing will really happen with it?
Well, I think I'm not the only one saying this, but I think it's just so funny that Ben Affleck wasn't nominated for Argo. It's just so funny that he's not even up for Best Director, because Argo is just sweeping every single award, and it looks like a heavy, heavy favorite. And the last time a movie won Best Picture and didn't win Best Director was Driving Miss Daisy back in 1989. I'm sorry. Last time a movie won Best Picture but wasn't nominated for Best Director was 1989 with Driving Miss Daisy. So I just think it's so funny that they're gonna have the Best Director award, and I think it'll either be Spielberg or David O. Russell for Silver Linings winning that, and then neither of those two movies will win Best Picture. Argo is most likely to win Best Picture. Now, you never know. I mean, something could surprise. My favorite movie, I didn't really have movies that I totally was in love with this year, but my favorite movie was End of Watch, about the two LA police officers. And I was a little, I don't know if sad is the right word, but I was just mildly interested that they didn't nominate it. And then I really enjoyed The Dark Knight Rises. I'm a big Batman fan, and Christopher Nolan got completely snubbed. So I was kind of interested in that. But I don't think they're too out of line with the choices this year.
I mean, I'm also going back to when you're talking about the film being nominated and a likely win for Best Picture, but the director isn't nominated. It kind of goes back to the old days when you would only have five in a category and they would give someone a Best Directing nod because their movie wasn't in a Best Picture category. It was kind of the booby prize, the consolation prize, right?
Yeah. I mean, things have changed over the years with directors, because if you go back to, like, the silent film days, you had this big moment where people really trusted the directors, and you had three major directors, Cecil B. DeMille, Eric von Stroheim, and D.W. Griffith. And DeMille had that sort of market sense, what would work and what didn't work, and most of his movies did well at the box office. Griffith with the movie Intolerance and von Stroheim with the movie Greed both went way over budget. I mean, at least in regard to what the movies made, they were both big disappointments. And you started having people come in like Irving Thalberg and the producers who really sort of took over the movies, and the directors became more like traffic cops. Obviously there were exceptions. You had things like Alfred Hitchcock, the director, and David O. Selznick, the producer, and they were fighting all the time over control of the movies. But generally speaking, the directors had less power. And then, in the late 60s, early 70s, you started seeing the influence of film schools, and you started seeing the directors exert more control. And now, a lot of the time the directors are the star, and if they're trusted by the studio, they get quite a bit of control. I mean, it reminds me of when they made Titanic. 20th Century Fox was absolutely aghast at how long it was, besides the fact it was going over budget. And they went to James Cameron and said, "James, we think you should cut an hour out of this movie so we can show it two times a night instead of once." And he said, "You want to cut my movie? You're going to have to fire me. You want to fire me? You're going to have to kill me." And he walked off the set. And he got his way eventually with what he wanted with Tarantino, with Kill Bill. I mean, the movie was so long, and Harvey Weinstein had experience with Quentin Tarantino. He knew it was no good to fight with him over cutting stuff, so he said, "Let's turn it into two movies." And that solved the problem. So, directors generally are more, considered artists and auteurs. worse than they were years ago. But with that all said, it's strange. It's just a strange situation with Argo and Ben Affleck, and you have to wonder if there's some potential jealousy involved that he's doing so well and he's only directed 3 movies.
Well, by the way, speaking of movies and the things we're talking with Stephen Shohat. He is the author of Hollywood Stories, short entertaining anecdotes about the stars and legends of the movies. You can get that from Hollywood Stories Publishing at hollywoodstories.com. We're talking with Stephen about the 85th annual Oscars, which are happening tomorrow night. Let's talk a little bit about the appearance of a musical. You don't get that very often, either in the Oscars or in movies at all anymore, and yet here we have Les Miserables. I don't know if it's going to win, but does this signal that perhaps there will be more movie musicals in the future, or is this still like a once in a blue moon thing?
Yeah, I don't think so, because you know, just for the fact that it takes so long to rehearse them. I mean that's why MGM, for example, you know, they used to make all the great musicals like Singing in the Rain and Brigadoon, and eventually it just was more expensive to make those movies than other movies. And I think that's, you know, going to be a factor. Now, if something's a big Broadway hit and shows a record of success, then it increases the likelihood. But Les Mis, I mean, that movie has been in development since 1988. So it's really tough to get musicals made. It's not. I mean, you know, it's not like the old days. I mean, in the '60s, you had West Side Story, My Fair Lady, Oliver, and Sound of Music, all winning Academy Awards. And after The Sound of Music came out, it was the biggest hit of all time at the time, and people thought musicals were the way to go. And then out came Dr. Doolittle, out came On a Clear Day You'll See Forever, and they bombed. And then you know, people blame The Sound of Music for ruining the movie industry. And I don't think it's ever been quite the same with musicals. Now, of course, there's always exceptions to every rule. I mean, Chicago won the Academy Award about 8 years ago. So if people smell success, then they'll follow up on it. But Les Mis is an interesting situation because Tom Hooper decided to have the performers sing live rather than the off-screen singing dubbed in, and it's got a lot of interest because of that, and it's probably the main reason why Anne Hathaway is likely to carry home the Academy Award, just because of her performance on the song I Dreamed a Dream.
Because it's actually her singing and not, say, Marnie Nixon or Shuby Taylor.
Yeah.
It's actually her.
Yeah, you go back to My Fair Lady and Audrey Hepburn. I mean, she was criticized for only giving half of a performance. And Audrey Hepburn, you know, was very upset about it. And Jack Warner's attitude was like, how can I pay somebody $1 million and they're upset? I mean, you know, and he said, I long for the days of Rin Tin Tin. He never complained when we dubbed his bark. But it's something that people judge, and Anne Hathaway on the screen for about 15 minutes, but it looks like, unless there's a big upset, that she's going to beat Sally Field as Mrs. Lincoln and take home the Oscar.
One of the other things that you mentioned in your notes leading up to this Oscar award is there's still a bias, at least in the awards community, against comedies, funny movies.
Yeah, I think you know, it's kind of deep inside. But if you go back to the Oscars originally, there, one of the reasons Louis B. Mayer started them was an attempt to get respectability for a scandal-ridden industry, and movies were still early on trying to compete with stage plays and Paramount Studios. Their original name was Famous Players and Famous Plays. So the moguls starting the movie industry were looking for prestige, and I think when you weigh them, there's always going to be that slight advantage of drama being more weighty than comedy. Now last year, if you go on the Internet Movie Database, they list the artist primarily as a comedy. And there are some movies that have one that are considered to be comedies. Another one would be The Apartment. The classic one is It Happened One Night, with Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert. But the bottom line is, if you get two movies like Gandhi and Tootsie, Gandhi just probably has, I think they were different years, by the way, but Gandhi was, is just considered a more of a heavyweight production and probably has the advantage of with the voters and just subconsciously almost.
Well, we're talking again, pardon me, with Stephen Chouhette about the Oscars tomorrow night. Let's wrap this up with some of your predictions for tomorrow in some of the categories. You can say if you disagree with what you think the Academy will choose, but let's just run through them fairly quickly and see what your thoughts are about, let's say, Best Actor. You got Bradley Cooper, Daniel Day-Lewis, Hugh Jackman, Joaquin Phoenix, and Denzel Washington. Your thoughts?
They're all great. All of them. Denzel Washington was great in Flight, but I don't disagree with what I think the Academy is going to do, which is Daniel Day-Lewis, who is a man who disappears. When you watch Lincoln, Sally Field and Tommy Lee Jones, they're great, but they're still there. But Daniel Day-Lewis completely disappears. He's just amazing to me. To me, he's the greatest actor in the world, and he's only been in 16 movies, and so this will make him 3 for 16. I mean, he's not even that prolific, and the things he does are just unbelievable, like Last of the Mohicans, living in the North Carolina woods, hunting and trapping his own food, my left foot being paralyzed the whole time, being carried to the set. It reminds me of a story. I mean, with Marlon Brando, he made his first movie. It was called The Men, and he played a paralyzed soldier. So he lived in the Veterans Hospital for a few weeks, confined himself to a wheelchair, and became good friends with the paraplegics. And so one day they were sitting around, they were out having a beer, and a very well-meaning nun came up and said, "Gentlemen, I just didn't mean to interrupt your conversation, but I just want to encourage you and keep praying, and if you pray you can walk, someday you'll get out of those chairs and walk." And Brando said, "I'll try it. I pray. Oh, it's a miracle. I'm cured." And he got up and he ran off.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, that's what... See, that's when he was lovable, not an anti-Semitic asshole. But, good for him on that. That was... So Daniel Day-Lewis, you're predicting and you hope will win. For Best Actress in a Movie, you've got Jessica Chastain, Jennifer Lawrence, Emmanuel Reba for Amour, Uwe Shangahunga Kaika Kukabaja Chumada Wallace for Best Beast of the Southern Wild, and Naomi Watts for The Impossible. Who's possible to win this?
Any one of them can win it except the little girl, I think. Emmanuel Reba, a movie I just have a difficult time seeing, but I think she's the one who's loved by the actors branch the most. But I think Jennifer Lawrence will win. It wouldn't shock me if anybody else won but the little girl, but Jennifer Lawrence, I think now she has the big franchise with The Hunger Games, and she did so well in the movie Winter's Bone, and I think this movie, Silver Linings Playbook, shows her range, and a lot of people thought she was too young to get the role at first, 15 years younger than Bradley Cooper, who she's paired up with, but after David O. Russell saw her Skype audition, he was so impressed by her, and it didn't seem like she was younger than him at all, and just came off very well, and is getting rave performances, and raves about her performance, and I think she'll take it home.
All right, and now we move very quickly to Best Supporting Actor, Alan Arkin, Robert De Niro, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Tommy Lee Jones, and Christoph Waltz.
Yeah, again, really good stuff. I mean, The Master with Philip Seymour Hoffman about the birth of something like Scientology, even though they deny that's what the movie's about. A very difficult movie to watch, but he always does a great job. Robert De Niro, he thought he overplayed the role in Silver Linings Playbook, and he sort of criticized the director for having him go a little bit too big. But I think the winner will be Christoph Waltz for Django. Just because he seems to be winning the awards quite a bit. I mean, I don't know. I like Alan Arkin, you know, in Argo. I mean, he based his character on Jack Warner, actually, and I thought he was great. So if I were voting, I'd probably give it to Alan Arkin. But I think Christoph Waltz for Django will win.
Waltz away with it. And then you've got the supporting actress thing, so it looks like it'll be Hathaway beating maybe Adams and Field and Helen Hunt and Jackie Weaver?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Sally Field was great, but I think the scenes, for me, Lincoln, it kind of slows down a little bit when they have the scenes with Sally Field in that movie. That the real interesting thing for me personally, you're only speaking for me, was the passage of the 13th Amendment. And when they get away from that, I think the movie slows down. Now, I mean, obviously, you know, she still did a really great job as Mary Todd Lincoln, and she really fought hard to get that role. I mean, she's 10 years older than Daniel Day-Lewis. In real life, Mary Todd Lincoln was 10 years younger than Abraham Lincoln. So she really had to struggle with Spielberg to convince him, and Daniel Day-Lewis, I think, had a lot to do with convincing Spielberg to give her that role. But anyway, Anne Hathaway, I think, will win.
And very, very important question and category now, the best documentary short subject. No, I'm just kidding. No one gives a crap. But we've been talking.
A lot of people have made it, too.
Of course. And yes, and then the great turn up on HBO or whatever. Although, I am curious. Do you have any thoughts about the foreign movie? I wish people may pay more attention to that, but you've got a Moore again.
I think a Moore might win that one. You know how that is. They give it to it for the. I mean, I haven't seen those movies, but you know, I just think when it's got that Best Picture nomination, you know, then they'll recognize it in the Best Foreign nomination. So, you know, I think it'll probably win. But yeah, I'm always, I'm curious. I'm not as well versed on those movies, but I like to see scenes from them. I'll tell you, one of my favorite movies of all time in the last couple of, it was made about 4 years ago,
yeah.
And it was called The Concert, and it was a foreign movie about a Russian orchestra who it's actually the Bolshoi Orchestra gets an invitation to perform in France, and the janitor intercepts the invitation, and he used to be the conductor, and he lost his position, so rather than give the invitation to the head guy, he gets his own old orchestra together, and they go to France. With a bunch of gypsies who write up their passports and pass themselves off as the Bolshoi, and they haven't rehearsed, and it's just a really moving, funny movie, and it's got nothing to do with this year's nominees, but I thought it was a movie that should, you know, at least have been considered for Best Picture. It came out the year The King's Speech won Best Picture. I love The King's Speech, but The Concert was, to me, just one of the greatest movies.
It's wonderful to be talking about the movies that we love and how they make us feel, and even better to talk with an expert on the subject like Stephen Schohedt. Everybody, you have to go to HollywoodStories.com to pick up a copy of his book called Hollywood Stories. It's full of anecdotes about stars of yesteryear and also today year, I guess would be what we would say. He'll be watching the Oscars, so will we all. Stephen Schohedt, thank you so much. You are wonderful. Thank you for sharing your movie love and movie lore in the day.
Thank you, Rabbi.